Hello and welcome to Talking Aussie Books, a weekly podcast bringing readers and writers of Australian fiction together. I'm Claudine Tennellis. As an avid reader and passionate advocate for Australian fiction, I make it my mission to spotlight local talent. So if you're looking for your next read or simply want to learn more about the Australian literary scene, this podcast is for you. Grab yourself a cuppa, sit back and relax.
This episode is brought to you by HarperCollins Publishers Australia.
Australia, and indeed the world, seems to be obsessed with romance at the moment. In a boom the likes of which hasn't been seen in 10 years, romance novels are back in vogue. Far from being the secret habit readers typically only enjoyed behind closed doors or books that were hidden in bedside drawers, romance novels are staging a popular comeback as publishers try and cater for the public's growing appetite for such books. Whether it's a trend driven by TikTok or BookTok, the bookish version of TikTok, or whether it's a reaction to the unpredictability of the last few years, who can really say? But make no mistake, listeners, romance is now at the very forefront of fiction sales. And my next guest and her new book are the perfect example of why readers continue to be drawn to the genre. Jessica Detman is a Sydney-based author of three novels and a children's book, a blogger and former editor who turned her hand to writing novels when her children were born. A couple of years ago, I chatted with Jess about her charming second novel, This Has Been Absolutely Lovely, a highly relatable book exploring parenting and families that had me hooked on Jess's insightful and sharply drawn observations of modern life. This year, Jess is back with her third novel. Without further ado is another delightful, humorous offering from Jess that sparkles with witty and punchy dialogue, much hilarity, and many a tender moment. A book that drew me in from the very first page, without further ado, is a story that shines a spotlight on what it means to be a modern woman in search of love and how the film and stories we grew up with shape us. So without further ado, let me welcome Jess back to the podcast today. Hi, Jess.
Thanks, Claudine. It's lovely to be back with you.
Congratulations on this marvellous novel. How are you feeling about it?
Oh, look, I'm feeling good about it, I think. It's a funny little book. It's a bit not exactly what it seems on the cover. And I've been a bit nervous about basing something around Shakespeare when so many people are scarred from school and not interested. But I think there's a place for it. And I think people will love this.
I couldn't agree with you more. Jess, I was wondering if you could tell me a little bit more about the story and what inspired you to write it.
Absolutely. So without further ado is the story of a 36-year-old romance publisher called Willa. And Willa works for an odd little family-run company run by one man, and all four of his adult sons work for him. Now, they produce instruction manuals, not books, and Willa is the only person in the company who is interested in books and romance novels in particular. And so she has been allowed to start her own publishing list, doing ebooks. In that sense, she is a book publisher. She doesn't publish hard copy books, but just ebooks. And the book follows the original plot of Much Ado About Nothing, Shakespeare's comedy, only up to a point, and then it diverges about halfway through. But it's about Willa finding love, trying to find love. She's a person who strongly doesn't want children but is searching for the big love. And the way she is hunting for it is to try to find the feeling that she had when she watched Kenneth Branagh's 1993 adaptation of Much Ado About Nothing as a 16-year-old. And we all know how we react to things when we're 16. There's quite big feelings involved. And she fell in love with that movie, and specifically with just the opening scenes of that movie, which are super evocative. It's in Italy. Everybody is beautiful. And there's stirring music. And it just made her feel so much hope and joy and love and excitement. And she is searching for that in her life. She looks for it in her relationships, in her friendships, and in the books she publishes. This is a book about what happens to you when you are clinging on so strongly to something that was so formative in your life, and whether that's in fact a sensible thing to do or indeed possible.
A very intriguing premise for a wonderful book. But, I mean, what inspired you to write it, Jess?
Quite literally, it was coming back to the movie as a 42-year-old at the time, having been, you know, I was Willa. I loved this movie. I didn't then think that I had to base my life around it, but I had a strong emotional reaction to this movie as a teenager, and I watched it over and over again until I was about, you know, probably till I left home, I guess, and I don't really remember watching it since then. It's been well over 20 years since I'd seen it. And then during the lockdowns, I think in late, must have been in 2020, the lockdown. I remember watching it. It was streaming at the time and coming across it one day, looking for a comfort watch and rewatching it and having exactly the same reaction and just thinking, oh my goodness, imagine somebody who was obsessed with this feeling. And then I just took it from there.
My next question was going to be, are there any parallels between Willa's obsession with this movie and you?
Just the jumping off point, really. I do know people who, and certainly did know people when I was younger, who had a really book and film-based approach to love and were entirely formed by these kind of romances and romantic comedies and thought that that's what love was and that's what you should be looking for. And that has not gone very well, you know. At a certain point, you have to realise that those, you know, there's an element of that feeling, that excitement, that attraction, but there's a lot more to it.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, do you think it's unrealistic for people to hold up their romantic relationships against the standards set by stories and films?
In some senses, absolutely unrealistic. I mean, certainly in the long term, that's not what it feels like day in, day out. Mm. But I do think that spark and that feeling probably does need to be there. And what's interesting is that there are romantic relationships in Willa's life that don't necessarily start with that spark. And so I've kind of explored that too, whether I don't think you exclusively need to feel like that for a great love to grow. Similarly, I don't think great love can't grow if you do have that excited butterflies in the stomach feeling to begin with.
As you said, the Shakespearean play Much Ado About Nothing is a fairly central theme in this book, and it's the movie that Willa is measuring her own romantic relationships against. But I wondered, in this modern day and age, is it fair to measure our romantic relationships against a Shakespearean play? I mean, a few of the characters in this novel had some interesting things to say about that, didn't they?
They did. This is the interesting play because it has some really modern attitudes in it, as well as some incredible, is that there's a will they won't they couple called Beatrice and Benedick. You know they will end up together. They spar, they flirt, they are, you know, the kind of essential couple that upon which so many people have based characters in rom-coms. You know, they're Darcy and Bridget, you know, they're so many people have based characters on this kind of a relationship. But there's also a sort of subplot of a young couple who fall in love, want to get married. Someone doesn't want them to get married, so their marriage is sabotaged and she is accused of having been unfaithful. And every single man in the play believes her without question, except for one, and that's Benedick, who's the hero, the Kenneth Branagh character. And he, you know, just intrinsically believes her because her cousin, who's the woman he loves, says she absolutely didn't do this. But hashtag believe her didn't exist back then, but this is where it began, you know. And so it was really delightful to discover that in such an old play, that there was this really modern attitude of one character who had a reasonable attitude towards a woman being accused of infidelity.
I loved Willa. What a wonderful, nuanced, but deeply flawed character she is.
Yes, she's a bit of a weirdo, isn't she? I love her.
She's so fiercely independent. She knows her own mind and yet still hankering after a love that she feels is unattainable. So much so that she begins to doubt herself and what she should accept, or indeed what she has accepted in the past. Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
Yeah, so Willa has had a great, well, what she thought was a great love. She had a long relationship for sure. And she was really kind of gaslit and ground down by that guy. And so since coming out of that relationship, she's sort of shaken herself awake and really started to look at what she wants from her life, because that kind of went on until she was about 30. Mm. And she now knows firmly that she doesn't want to have any children, and she's pretty sure she doesn't want to get married in a legal sense. And saying those two things to everyone around her has made people sort of think she doesn't want love and that she's just going to happily play the field forever. And her friends sort of know that that's not the case, but they also know that she's a bit of an odd fish and it will take a particular kind of person to suit her.
I felt like there was a great deal of irony in Willa being a publisher of romance novels and unable to see past her idealized version of what love should look and feel like. Was this something you consciously wanted to explore? And if so, why?
Oh, I think I did. I mean, I think that was the perfect job for Willa. She is completely immersed day in, day out in stories, and specifically stories of love. And she thinks, she has a friend who thinks that she's wasting her talents on these kind of books. But Willa argues that romance is essential for keeping people's heart muscles fit while they're not in love. She says, you know, if you don't keep reading about love and reminding yourself of what it can be, you won't necessarily recognize it when it comes along. Huge irony, of course, because Willa's not always the best at recognizing things when they come along. But, you know, it was really fun to have her in that position, and fun to kind of invent a strange little desktop publishing operation for her as well. The other fact, of course, is that she's so obsessed with stories that she sees her own life with a really strong narrative arc. And so she's sort of unconsciously always trying to make her life into a story, and she's not sure where the ending is and what should happen in it, but there are certainly people in her life who observe her and have to remind her that you don't have to live your life like a story with a perfect narrative arc. You know, things can go up and down, things can be boring, you can have highs and lows. It can be like a really long-running television series or drama or a soap opera if you need to, but it doesn't have to be one neat novel-shaped thing.
Indeed. Speaking of which, Ruth was another wonderful character. I think I would have liked to have seen a lot more of Ruth in this story. But she and Willa have a really interesting discussion, which made me wonder about endings, and specifically about whether or not there really is a happy ever after, or should we be more concerned with a happy for now?
Well, I'm a big believer in a happy for now. I think, you know, trying to plan your long-term future is fairly futile. Ruth is a believer in seizing love when it's in front of you. She was she's Willa's grandmother, and she was a member of the free love community in a small South Coast town during her 40s, I guess. The rest of the family regard her as incredibly strange. She's an anarcho-feminist. They don't take her to parties, for example. I think Ruth speaks great wisdom to Willa. Yeah, that's why she appears when she does in the book.
Jess, as with most romance and rom-com novels these days, authors like you manage to address some serious themes in amongst the lighter moments. It's difficult to discuss what these are in the context of this book, but suffice it to say that I think it highlights some unsavory attitudes towards women. Are you conscious of this while you're writing, or are the themes that you choose to explore more character-driven?
They are character-driven primarily. The theme that you're referring to, that I won't specify because it's a bit of a spoiler, that came up because the same thing happens essentially almost the same thing happens in the play, and I needed a way in which somebody could be misunderstood, their actions could be misunderstood, and so that seemed to me the most practical way to achieve what I needed to achieve. And then it did bring up some pretty big themes that I hope I have addressed in a respectful and helpful manner. But yeah, there were some tricky things to cover.
I'm not sure if you mentioned, but I think that you wrote this book during lockdown. Is that correct?
It is correct, yes. I started it at the beginning of 2021 and wrote most of it, was supposed to be writing most of it during that long 4-month lockdown we had in Sydney in late 2021, which was definitely a challenge.
You had children at home and homeschooling.
I did. It actually ended up being, you know, it was very hard, and I had a few meltdowns about it because everything was so uncertain and so scary, and it didn't feel romantic or comedic at all anywhere in my life. But it ended up being something of an escape for me. Writing doesn't always feel like that for me. Sometimes I have to drag myself away and go and do it. This time I was more than happy to drag myself away from trying to teach year two and year four or whatever it was at the time, and, you know, wash the groceries and hunt for vaccine bookings and, or, you know, all of that sort of thing, buy rat tests. I don't even think we had rat tests then. It was lovely to escape from it and hard to keep the pandemic out of it. There are a couple of references to it, but I was quite conscious that I wanted to address that the pandemic had occurred, but not to be dwelling in it too much.
Was your move towards rom-com a response to the pandemic, or was it always that you were going to write this story?
I don't plan very much. I just write what I write. So no, I didn't intend it to be a response to the pandemic. I could see that rom-coms were becoming more popular again, and they have always been popular with me. But you were absolutely right about what you said in your introduction, that there has been a kind of destigmatizing of them, I think, and a real acceptance of their place in our culture.
Do you have a view as to why this has happened?
I do. I mean, I think there's a few factors. I think the world's really hard and scary, and I think that people do reach towards things that are more comforting in times like that. I also think that there's been a real democratization of criticism and of just voices being heard about what people like. There didn't used to be very many ways to hear about books. Newspapers, magazines, television and radio was sort of it. TikTok, BookTok, as you said, Instagram, all of these forms of social media have just given a voice to people who love things, and they have unashamedly shouted about how much they love them, and that spreads the word, and that makes other people stop pretending that they don't like those things. And I think that's just been wonderful.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. Jess, you've obviously had some inside experience with the Australian publishing industry in your role as an editor. So I wanted to ask you, do you think that the Australian publishing industry is responding more appropriately now to this demand, do you think? I mean, because Australian writers were mostly publishing their romance titles overseas before 2020, I think.
I think so. This book doesn't quite fall squarely in the romance. It's a bit more than that, and it's a bit less than that in some ways. I'm a delight for my publishers to try to sell, because I don't sit in a box very easily. But there's certainly more rom-coms being published now than I think there have been for about 15 or 20 years. I think they're trying to respond.
Jeff, if there was one thing that you would like readers to take away from this novel, what would it be?
Ooh, I would like them to think about the things that have formed the way they think in their own lives. You know, what's your much ado? What are the films and the books that made you the way you are, and how are they serving you? I think that's a useful thing for people to think about. It sounds a bit, you know, like hard work, but I do think it's worth considering the attitudes that we've taken and learnt from the media we've consumed, especially as young people, and take a moment to have a look at how they have influenced the way we still think. Also, I'd like them to be entertained. That's the main thing.
Yeah. Well, I have no doubt, no fear, my friend, that people are going to be utterly entertained by this delightful book.
Great news.
Now, the last time we chatted, I asked you for some writing tips for writers who listen to this podcast. But this time I wondered if you could tell us if there was anything you knew about yourself now as a writer that you wished you knew before you were published.
I know that my voice is my voice, and I don't have to try and make it into anyone else's voice. That would have been useful to know, but I don't think you can know that really until you've done a bit of it. And it takes more than one book, I think, to establish a voice. And it's even a bit of a hard thing to pin down, you know, what even is your voice? But I think it's a tone, it's a way of making a turn of phrase. And if you can find it and it's something that people are enjoying reading, hang on to it, and don't think that it can only be applied in one format. Mm. Yeah, I'm enjoying stretching my writing muscles and seeing where my particular writing voice can go.
Brilliant. Thank you for sharing that. Jess, since we last spoke, you published your first children's novel, There's No Such Book. I wondered if you could tell us a little bit more about that, and had you always wanted to write a children's book?
No, I hadn't. This book kind of came to me fully formed to anybody, really, and I don't expect will ever happen again. I love children's books, and I love reading them to my kids. They don't like me to read to them very much anymore, but I certainly adored when we were in the little picture book stage of life. I just think picture books are incredible. I can't draw to save myself. And I'd been speaking to a publisher who thought that I should try and write a kid's book, and I couldn't think of any ideas. The publisher said that she would love a book about Book Week and Book Week costumes and the nightmare involved in producing one of those for your child, often with very little notice. And I thought about that idea for about 6 months with no great flashes of brilliance, until one night when I was lying with my son while he was falling asleep, and I suddenly, because the idea about of talking about book costumes is I thought it would be really hard to do without mentioning lots of actual books and thereby getting into a bit of a copyright nightmare situation. And then I thought, well, what if you had somebody who was trying to convince their child to dress up as a book that didn't exist? And so I wrote it on my phone. It didn't take me very long, and it was really, really fun. I suddenly created this little character of a girl called Ellie, who is a stressed out, nervous little kid, and her mother. Ellie comes to her mum with no notice night before book week, says she needs a costume, and her mum starts to try and think up things that could be potentially books based on what they have in their house that she could already wear. And every single thing she suggests, her daughter says, there is no such book about that, until her mum comes up with a really ingenious plan.
Well, that just sounds delightful. And congratulations on that. How long has it been out now?
Came out at Book Week last year, so last August. And I'm going to brag now, because the incredible illustrator, Jake Minton, has just been nominated for a Children's Book Council Award for Best New Illustrator.
Aww.
So it's very, very exciting.
Oh, that is delightful news.
He absolutely deserves to win.
Fingers crossed for him then.
Yeah.
Jess, I wanted to say once more, congratulations on Without Further Ado. I absolutely loved it. A must read for anyone looking for a smart, funny, and warm read. I wish you every success with it, Jess, and thanks for joining me on Talking Aussie Books again today.
Thank you for having me.
That's a wrap, folks. If you enjoyed this podcast episode, please drop me a line via my webpage at claudinetonellis.com, via Instagram, Facebook, or Twitter. Alternatively, consider leaving a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or Google Podcasts. Until next time, happy reading!